You've heard the expression, preaching to the choir, right? Well, Eberson Eggerich says we need to keep in mind that everything we're posting on Facebook, putting online, it's not just the choir who's paying attention.
We can make our point. We can get people in the back room high-fiving us. You know, we've got the political divide now. It's the one-upmanship, you know. But we're losing civility. And if we don't step back and have enough care for ourselves to say, you know what, I want to be an individual who ultimately is an influential individual that no matter where we are in the culture, they say, I don't agree with him, but he's a man of integrity. She's a woman of integrity.
This is Family Life Today. Our host is Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. If there's a disconnect between who you are in person and who you are online, that's an integrity issue. That's a problem. We'll talk more about that today. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. I see you on Twitter from time to time. Are you active on Twitter? You look at Twitter every day?
No.
You look at Twitter every week?
Yes, usually.
Mm-hmm. You're checking it out?
A little bit.
Would you say the tone on Twitter is God-honoring? That was the term I was thinking. And then I thought, that's just such a ridiculous question just asking,
yeah.
Is it?
No, I'm afraid it isn't. And I think the question is, what does it become? I think it's become a harmful way of human beings relating to each other. And you know, real relationships don't occur in 140 characters.
Even now they boosted it up to 280, and
yeah,
that still doesn't help.
It's still not helping. You need to know how to relate to someone in complete sentences over a lifetime. That's what makes a marriage that goes the distance, and also relationships with our children. We're joined today by the author of a book. I really like the title. When I saw this, I thought, well done, well done. You're a marketing genius.
It wasn't my idea. It was my daughter's.
Oh, was it? Well, she's a marketing genius.
She is.
It's called Before You Hit Send, Preventing Headache and Heartache.
Yep.
Emerson Eggerich joins us again. Welcome back, Emerson.
Thank you, Dennis.
Are you on Twitter?
I am not personally, but the organization is. Again, the question on the table is, why is there this kind of lack of civility, mean-spiritedness? What's happening? I think everybody recognizes, you know, this doesn't seem to be a prudent way to communicate, and yet there seems to be this ongoing narrative, and maybe we can address that, and whether or not there is going to be a consequence of that, or this can continue. And I'm going to take the position that these principles are eternal, and when you violate them, there is a consequence. Particularly, I think Jesus himself said, the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the content that I'm communicating, but the way in which that comes across is saying far more about who I am as a person than what I'm saying about the other person in that tweet.
And these principles apply whether we're face-to-face or whether we're
Absolutely.
Texting or
Absolutely.
Whether we're whatever the form of communication is. But let's talk about the fact that more and more of our communication is happening through devices, is happening almost in a detached sense. What's going on in terms of our ability to relate to one another, given the technological environment we're in and how communication has been affected by that?
All right. Well, there are two sides of that. I mean, obviously, we see the social ineptness of some people because they're all sitting together in a room, all looking, and they're even texting each other while they're 2 feet away from each other. At the same time, I think there's more communication going on than ever. So there's another side of this that I think has an upside, and I'm more optimistic about this if people abide by the principles, because they aren't going to go away. And they apply text to text, face to face, voice to voice. Those are the dimensions. We sit down with someone over a cup of coffee, or whether you're on the phone to your mother in some other state, or you're texting somebody or emailing them. These principles cannot be violated. And when we violate them, even if we're innocent, we're going to end up rupturing relationships at some level, or we're going to make an enemy where we don't need to. But right now, there are people who believe that if you lie about someone, you bully them, you say things that aren't necessary, you have innuendo, and you're communicating something that really isn't true, but it's unclear, but it gives the impression that somehow we're going to win the the day on that. And I'm taking a strong stand is that you'll win short term, but you won't win long term. Mm-hmm. It will not work long term. But many people are trying to figure that out in the politics of things as well as in business. But, you know, it's beginning to come back now. I know how many businessmen who are going to hire, they're telling me now after the interview, the first thing they do is they go to the person's Facebook.
Right.
And they are determining based on this, and they don't quote Jesus, the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. But when they read the content, they immediately know about character. And they make a decision based on how they see that person communicating content. It suggests the heart and the character of the person, and they're not hiring individuals. So I think, again, this digital footprint that we're leaving, everybody has to realize there is a serious issue here. Nothing you put out there is going to go away. World Wide Web means worldwide. Social media means it's social. And that even though you delete it, somewhere it's being collected. And we just need to be reminded of what Jesus said, that everything I say that's a careless word, I'm going to have to say to my Heavenly Father, you know, something about that. I mean, that's a sobering thing. It's actually discouraging. It's overwhelming. But what we just have to ask the Lord is help us do this. But let's be mindful. We have an audience of one ultimately. And what I'm saying may get away on a social media, if that's even an option. But we who believe in Christ and trust Him, He's the one that said, every careless word we will have to give an account for. And that's why I think this book was so important to me over the years, because I wanted to make sure, did I say things that were untrue? Did I say things that were unkind? Did I say things that were unnecessary? Did I say things that were unclear? More often than not. But because those four questions I asked myself as a checklist, I kept myself out of a lot of trouble. And I have to say that. And I think that's why Joy, my daughter, was watching this. And she wanted me to write this book because she saw me attempt to abide by that. Not perfectly, but I tell you, I have everything within me to make a mess of things real quick.
I'll tell you, on a Saturday morning, I was reading the newspaper. This goes way back, but just to your point, I was reading the newspaper and I read about how for all practical purposes, a pornographic movie was going to be shown at the local theater. It was called NC-17. I don't even know if that category
I don't think they have those ratings
exists
anymore,
yeah. anymore, but it was beyond R. And I thought, I need to do something. All that is necessary for evil to triumph, Edmund Burke said, is for good men to do nothing. So I decided I was not going to do nothing. I also decided that in order to keep my own passions under restraint, I would take my daughters with me as I went down to talk to the theater manager. And I wanted them, first of all, to see their dad taking a stand and dealing with kindness with someone where he disagreed with them. But I also wanted to be accountable to him, make sure mm-hmm. I didn't lose mm-hmm. my cool with this guy. And so we went down there and we met with the manager. I know it was not his decision.
Right.
He's just doing what the big corporation said to do. And I just said, I want you to know I'm just a daddy. I got six kids. Here's three of my daughters. And I just ask you, if you're a dad, would you want your daughters to be treated like what you're showing in there? And he goes, no, sir. I said, I'd just like you to pass that on. And I got in the car along with the girls, and we drove back home. And I don't remember what they said, but I do have a sense in which I had dealt with that guy, at least this time, speaking the truth with kindness and fairness, but I recognize my own weakness, and I've got one because I'm a passionate person. I can overstate things. I think it's good if we know our own liabilities in these situations, and if it's in our most intimate relationships, like with our spouse, it's not good to have a knockdown, drag-out argument with your spouse at midnight. Maybe you just need to call a timeout and reschedule this debate, disagreement, whatever it is, for tomorrow. But recognize your weaknesses so you can speak the truth with kindness. Mm.
It illustrates something that's not only you modeled this, and you talked about last time, Hook Rainey, and just the integrity, the way your father walked and lived. And one of the challenges for us as parents is to realize it's important for us to abide by this, even if the people around us don't, because people are watching. Our kids are watching. And for them to see this, what a legacy. What a joy to know that when we're in our casket, our children will say, my mom, my dad spoke the truth. They were kind every time they did that. They only said what was necessary. There was never any gossip in our home. And they were always clear. And they taught us this by the way they lived. And your dad did that. You did that toward your daughters. And the challenge for all of us is to be reminded here, it isn't just enough for me to get away with something so that my self-serving, I'll lie and I'll be unkind and rude because I can get something. Yeah, you can, short term. But it's that whole idea of people are watching. And what are they watching? And what are we really going to gain in the end? You know, it's like the father in a line with his, you know, six-year-old boy, and they're getting into some amusement park or whatever, and somebody drops a $10 bill out of their pocket. And the boy sees the dollar come out of that person's pocket. The dad reaches down, picks up the $10 bill, and puts it in his own pocket. And I made the point, for $10, you just sent a message to your son that integrity doesn't matter.
Yep.
For $10, you just sold your integrity. You know, or the flip side of that, the boy was in court. He was 10 years old. He was told to testify about something that he saw. And the lawyer that was trying to twist him up, your dad told you what to say here, didn't he? He said, yes, sir, he did. That's what I thought. He told you what to say. What did he tell you to say, son? My dad said, son, just tell the truth. And that's all you have to keep telling over and over again.
Speaking of little kids watching, Barbara and I would be having an argument. And this is kind of the flip side. When you're speaking the truth, perhaps not in love, and it's not good. But in the kitchen, I was mindful many, many times that all of a sudden our little argument was now being visited by some little radar units who were all locked into this ping pong match.
You can't get them when you want them, but
no,
boy, they're
there. You can't. Yeah. You know, and sometimes we'd stop and say, Mom and Dad are just having a little spirited debate.
Heated fellowship.
That's right. You know, we're okay. We're committed to each other. We're not going anywhere. But you know what? We're going to reschedule this, kids. But, you know, when you do lose it, confess it. Deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Repent and show them what repentance looks like, because as human beings, we're going to fail a lot of times, and we need to know how to handle it.
Let me ask you about Dennis's trip to the movie theater, because some people might say, okay, was that necessary? Did he need to go down there and do that? Did he need to speak out on something like that?
Why are you questioning that?
Because here's what I'm trying to get to. How do we apply that principle, and why would anybody communicate something that's unnecessary? What's our motive for doing that? Help us practically with the whole idea of how do I weigh out whether this is necessary?
Well, I think the point we made the other time, that if it's true, if it's kind, if it's necessary, it's clear. Each of us has to decide, you know, in his case, you know what? If good men do nothing, you know, evil's going to triumph in that regard. And even though Dennis made clear reference to the fact that this probably isn't going to go anywhere, but that there it was a sense in his own heart that somebody needed to give voice to something, you know, because it's the right thing to do. Coming to mind is Luther. There were some beggars that came to their home late at night, and so give to those who ask. So Luther gave them all this stuff, you know, and early in the morning, they were awakened because these guys had come back. They were burglars and had broken into the home and were stealing stuff. Katie, his wife, had been suspicious of them when they came to the door. And so when they then burglarized and the police had come, she was saying to him, you know, see, I told you. See, would you do it again? He said, yes, I would, because the Lord said, give to those who ask. And there comes a moment when sometimes it isn't about just pragmatics and what's practical. We have to be obedient to that sense that this is the right thing for me to do. And in that case, the right thing was to be an example before your daughters as well. There was more going on than just the manager. But I think that's where it begins. I think sometimes maybe we just need to say, you know what, something's bothering me. Maybe if I say it in truth and say it kindly because it's necessary and clear, nothing's going to come of this. But you know what? I need to learn to do this. Most people are passive. Most people are phlegmatic. Most people sit back and don't do anything. And the message I'm sending would be, you know what? You need to step out. Even if you say to yourself, it may not result in anything, that's okay. It's because the Lord wants you to do this.
And it doesn't mean you have to be the most gifted or you've got to be prophetic. You just may have to be disturbed about what's taking place and say, you know what? I'm going to say something.
Yes.
I'm going to do my best to say it in a way where it gets heard.
That's right.
But I'm going to push back against this.
Well, and on this point, people say, well, I'm not a great communicator. And one of the points I make is people that you think are great communicators are that way because they worked really hard at these four principles. Mm-hmm. It isn't a matter of being eloquent or just a naturally gifted person. It's a matter of taking time to apply these four things. And I say to that person out there who thinks, well, I'm not a Dennis or I'm not an Emerson or I'm not a Bob. Well, how did Dennis, Emerson, and Bob get to this position? Because we made a commitment that we were going to guard our mouth as best best we could. And we were going to follow our passions in such a way, though, that it didn't turn people off, but hopefully was more appealing and was a sweet aroma.
There have been mornings that I've come down into the breakfast room. Marianne's usually up before I am, and so I'll come down. And I have, on occasion, left the garage door open all night long. I didn't put the garage door down when I pulled the car in. I leave it open all night long, which does not serve my wife well in terms of her security needs, right? She'll wake up, find that, and it's like, I'm not being well protected. She didn't realize she was threatened in the night, but now she's feeling it. There have been some times when Marianne has said, I need to share this with Bob, that he left the garage door open. There have been other times when she said, I'm just going to let it go. And I think what she has done is she has tried to weigh out in terms of is this necessary that I share this at this time? Mm-hmm. She's tried to weigh out what are the circumstances that were involved in all of this? Is Bob preoccupied with something? Is this common for him to do this? Is this a pattern that he's getting into? Mm-hmm. She has tried to ask some evaluative questions and sometimes said, yeah, I need to bring it up. Other times said, no, I'm just going to let it go. We do that all the time in marriage when we overlook some things and choose to confront on other things. What are the kinds of criteria we ought to bring to that question?
Well, I think that's a great illustration. Is it really necessary? One woman said, you know that little thing in the back of your brain that tells you not to say something before you say it? Yeah, I don't have that little thing. You know, I don't have that little thing. Well, you know, we justify the fact that we don't have a filter and we're just blurting things out. And then we wonder why when we show up, everybody else is leaving. They don't want to be around us. But I think part of your wife's wisdom there is that she has paced herself. You know, there is a point where it is necessary to remind him of my insecurities and my need to be protected. But there are other times, you know what, it's really not necessary. He's a good-willed man who would die for me if I don't kill him first, you know. And that this was a situation where he was overwhelmed with all that's going on. There's no right or wrong answer in this, but it illustrates her willingness to practice these principles. And again, this is a great illustration because we're never going to know the perfect way of doing it. There isn't, you know, it's not the perfect way. Sometimes we may say, you know, it's not necessary, and maybe it was necessary. Yeah. We think it was kind, they didn't. We thought it was unkind, they didn't. I mean, again, the excitement is that checklist. You know, and part of the challenge with the social media is I begin the book with talking about the fact that we need to do what we do with emails with the understanding that this might be read in a deposition before the Supreme Court. You know, there has to be this serious, I think, commitment to doing this right. And right now in our culture, that's exactly the growing sentiment. Whether it's our conduct, how we treat people with sexual harassment issues, whether it's emails that we're saying, suggestive language, there is a price to pay when we cross over. We think we can get away with this stuff. It'll come back to bite us, and it will discredit us until we go to our grave. There are people now who have completely lost all credibility because they didn't abide by these things, whether it was in emails or whether it was in their personal, interpersonal dynamics. There is a price to pay.
And when I think about what I tweet, or if I'm going to post something on Facebook, I do try to stop and think, okay, there are going to be people who disagree with me. If I were to say this to them face to face, would I say it this way, with this tone, with these words? Because in the blindness of social media, where you're not face to face with somebody, you can be more reckless with your words. If you stopped and asked the question, is this how I would say it if I was face to face with somebody who might disagree with me? That might moderate the tone of what you're saying significantly.
That's why I wrote the book, because again, you cannot violate these things. Mm-hmm. We can short term, we can make our point. We can get people in the back room high-fiving us. You know, we've got the political divide now. It's the one-upmanship, you know. But we're losing civility. And the idea that if we sacrifice truth in order to win a debate, you will win that debate. But it's kind of like the whole idea, you can win battle after battle after battle, but eventually you lose the war. Hmm. And if we don't step back and have enough care for ourselves to say, you know what, I want to be an individual who ultimately is an influential individual, that both sides of the aisle, that no matter where we are in the culture, they say, I don't agree with him, but he's a man of integrity. She's a woman of integrity. You can do this. We can be a person who is winsome, even though the people that we're talking to do not like what we're saying. Mm-hmm. We can do this, and we need to be reminded that that comes through civility and a personal dignity, and also believing in other people. And that's the challenge that I'm extending to people now. Abide by these four principles, and when you get near to death, you will look back and not regret the impact that you made.
You know, if we could start a national campaign to have the entire nation memorize Ephesians 4, 31 and 32, I think we could change the tone.
You want to read
it? The public discourse. I'm going to read it right now. Absolutely. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice.
You just back up. All bitterness, wrath, slander, clamor.
Anger.
Put away from you. That's a good starting point, because there's a lot of bitterness, anger, wrath, slander going on, isn't
there? And all malice. And I'm not sure exactly what malice means, but it seems to me thinking about getting even.
It's a wicked intent, yeah.
It's trying to get even with somebody. And then the last part of that verse, verse 32, be kind to one another. Tender-hearted. Imagine that. Forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you. So did you deserve forgiveness? I didn't. But he forgave me. That means those of us who profess to follow Christ ought to be image bearers of the forgiveness that's been afforded to us. And it's why what you've written here is so important. I'm grieved by some of the national discourse that's taking place. I really am. I fear for what we are training our children to do and to think and a way of behaving going forward. And it may be that we're approaching a time when we have to turn off some of the media and turn back to the Bible and memorize these verses and talk about them. And then talk about how can we do that in our family. You're not going to do it perfectly. So when you fail, what do? You ask the other person to forgive.
Yeah.
That's really when I think families are operating most and looking like what they're supposed to look like, Bob.
And you know, I think a family could benefit just from spending time in those four questions, but I'm thinking about a husband and wife reading through this book together.
That's too convicting.
We don't want to go that far, huh?
No, of course not. That would really change the way husband and wives relate to each other.
And when that changes, that's going to affect the whole dynamic of the family. When mom and dad's communication shifts and kids are seeing that mom and dad speak the truth in love, that they're kind and tenderhearted, that they put away anger, wrath, malice, and slander, that changes everything.
May I grab the soapbox back just for a second?
Yes, go ahead.
I think what we're talking about here is really important for the next generation and how they're going to practice the faith we're trying to pass on to them. When they do not see us as adults modeling what the Bible teaches. They hear us talk about it. They go with us as parents to church and hear these passages taught, but they don't see mommy and daddy practicing it, living by it. And when they fail, they admit it.
Yeah.
That's when children will start to grab hold of what we've got and go, that's authentic. That's no baloney faith there. And that's what we have to be passing on to the next generation.
Okay, so before you post something on Facebook or hit send on an email, go to familylifetoday.com and click the link for the online assessment. I think, again, this would be great for a husband and wife to do together. It's also great for all of the kids in the family to go through this assessment and see where your strengths and weaknesses are in your interpersonal relationships, your communication with one another. And then get a copy of the book before you hit send from Emerson Eggerichs. And read it together as a couple or as a family. I've already mentioned this week that this is a book that Christian high schools are starting to use. Youth groups are going through this book together. This is practical stuff. And again, you can order it from us online at familylifetoday.com, or you can call to order. 1-800-FL-TODAY is the number. 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. You know, I mentioned how practical this issue is, the issue we're talking about today. One of the things we're committed to here at Family Life is to providing you with practical, biblical help and hope for your marriage, for your family, for your extended family relationships. We want to effectively develop godly marriages and families. That's the mission of Family Life today. And every time you join with us and support this ministry, you are making possible this kind of practical help and hope for friends and neighbors, people in your community, actually people all around the world. There are hundreds of thousands of people today who have been tuned into what we're talking about. And as a supporter of Family Life Today, you have helped make that possible. So on behalf of those listeners who have benefited from today's program, thank you for your financial support. If you're able to help with the donation today so that your friends and neighbors and people all around the world can benefit from this program in the weeks and months to come, you can donate online at familylifetoday.com, or you can call to donate at 1-800-FL-TODAY. We would like to say thank you for your support this month by sending you the 2019 Family Life Calendar that's all about building togetherness in your family. That's our thank you gift to you when you make a donation. And you can mail your donation to us if you'd prefer. Our mailing address is Family Life Today at Box 7111, Little Rock, Arkansas, and our zip code is 72223. Now, tomorrow we're going to talk about the power of humor, why funny is powerful. Michael Jr. is going to join us. He's a stand-up comedian. If you saw the movie War Room, he was in that movie. He's got a new movie that's coming out next week. We're going to talk about that with him tomorrow. I hope you can be with us for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a Crew ministry. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.